Okay, here we are, back hour number two, and we're taking a look at some pictures from earlier patrols, which will be visited again, the locations you see therein, and much more, much, much more. Okay, we're looking at picture number four. Now, I've seen this before. This is an historic location.
Right, we go there every year, and if you remember seeing the old films like Triumph of the Will, etc.,
I remember Hitler the arches, and, yeah.
Right, exactly. As Hitler and two other guys, one was Rome, and then after he got clipped, it was Himmler and another, I don't remember the other guy, but they would walk slowly through the massed troops from the stadium at Zeppelinfeld all the way to this. And this is where they had the dedication to the men who fell and the blood flag ceremony, the flag that had the blood of the 23 guys who were killed during the failed 1923 beer hall putsch. And so that's where this is. We go here every year, and our friend who takes us there has a whole book full of photographs of the way it was back in those days, and he tells us all about it. And it's like being with your favorite history professor, somebody who knows what they're talking about. And so that's one of the places we go. And that's in the next picture, number five. That's our friend over there, Michael. He's a lieutenant colonel in their army, and he's the mayor's assistant. And this is inside the stadium at Zeppelinfeld. Everybody goes there and stands, you know, where Hitler stands to make his speeches.
Right.
You don't put your right arm in the air, though, because there's police there. You do that, and you're out of the country instantly with a heavy fine.
That's not a joke. That's really how stupid people are.
Well, that's just the way, and the police, they're only following orders. Where have I heard that before?
Yeah.
But you just can't screw around. What seems to be okay and normal to us, maybe a joke to us, there's felonies over there, and they're hard on it. They're really hard, so you don't do that. But we go there, we take our pictures there, and we go inside here, and what Michael's pointing at in photo five is one of the two huge big braziers that was on either end of the stadium that had flaming oil in it during the ceremonies, and it was really impressive.
Never would have known that that's what they're called.
Yeah, well, I think that's what they're called. I'll have to look that up. Brazier.
Close enough.
Yeah.
Number six, a beautiful, see, there you go again, a beautiful ceiling. Look
right.
At the look at the ornate gold-colored metal up there. I wonder what that is.
It's more than gold-colored. And this is inside that stadium. And when they had a rally, the people would be packed in out front there, hundreds of thousands, and they had to pay there to be. It was not a free rally. They had to pay, which is how
that's
Hitler
interesting.
And the party,
that's how they raised their money. I didn't
that's
know that.
That's one of the ways. The other way was with the sale of the book Mein Kampf, which is the second biggest selling book ever in history, second only to the Holy Bible.
Now, ask yourself, ladies and gentlemen, how can that be? The most hated evil man in history, and his book is the second biggest seller in recorded human history. That's,
yeah.
Something's wrong with that picture somehow.
Yeah. You mean to say we've been lied to? Oh, my goodness. I'm shocked. You hear me? To find out that gambling's going on in the back room. Oh, wrong movie.
That's it.
Anyhow, when Hitler would come by train behind the stadium, and he'd come in here into this room, and they'd have big receptions, and we'd go in there, and then we'd go up a couple flights of stairs into what had been his office, not his permanent office, but just an office he used when he was in the area, and then all the way up to the top to the huge bronze doors that only Hitler was allowed to go through. Nobody goes through them now because they're locked and welded shut. Then after we tour around here, take photos, etc. We go into the train station where Hitler used to get off the train. It's no longer a train stop, it's a restaurant. But the trains still go rumbling on by about every 5-10 minutes. They don't stop there, but and the food is excellent. More food.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Then when we leave there, oh, we go other places too. We went, and we're going again to the castle that was from the family von Stauffenberg. You know, the guy that put the bomb under under the table. Out of Hofschanze.
Yeah.
The guy who came running back to Berlin and said, Hitler's dead and we're in charge. And then somebody told him, no, he's not, and no, you aren't. Go stand over against this wall here. He never lived there. That was his uncle Berthold lived in that castle. But because Klaus Schenk von Stauffenberg visited there 37 times in the 2 years before the 1944 attempt on Hitler's life, the Gestapo were not very friendly to Berthold. They thought he knew something about the planned assassination, and he underwent a lot of torture. So, but it still belongs to the von Stauffenberg family. We go there, we visit, and there are many other places we go. You can go to sharkhunters.com, go to tours, and just look at the 2016 Southern Patrol. You'll see all sorts of more places that we went, and we're going again in 2017. I like the Southern Patrol. It's like my own backyard.
Nice.
And when we're done in Nuremberg, we come down to Salzburg, and that's the big castle up on the hill. We always go up to the castle and tour the castle. People do that on their own because you have to take a tram that goes up about a 45-degree angle. And not everybody wants to get on that thing. It's never had any accidents, to my knowledge, but nobody, you know, sometimes people just don't want to get onto it. But there are, you know, tremendous history up there.
When was that castle built? We know?
Oh, boy. That's a good question. I don't know, but it suffered a lot of damage in the 30 Years' War. I remember that. So it was before the 30 Years' War. But it's a huge place, and each bastion had its own name, but it also had its own... It was its own little inner city. It had the army troops there, and their families were there. So each bastion was like a little city, part of the whole gizmo. And there's one restaurant we eat in, and it was a place where the soldiers would eat like 500 years ago.
Wow.
And they have ice cream there.
Well, there you go. That's it.
If they got ice cream, Cooper's going. And of course, picture 8, the most famous man of Salzburg, Mozart, Wolfgang Amadeus, and he was born within 100 yards of where I'm standing to take that photo.
Hmm.
And there's so much more to see and do in Salzburg. This is where we have lunch in that one beer hall that was open for business in the year 1300. And we have other sightseeing that we do around there as well.
I was built in 1462.
What was?
The castle.
Oh, okay. There you go.
They call it Hohensalzburg Castle. Hohen.
Okay, yeah, because the Hohenzollerns were the
right, the ruling elite
family. Yeah, right. like the Bushes and the Clintons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, get off the politics, Harry. And you can buy Mozart's balls. That's a big seller there. Mozart's balls. It's a candy. It's a ball of marzipan candy with a chocolate coating. Every place you go there, Mozart's Kugeln, Mozart's balls.
So that's, do they get the joke over there? I guess they do.
I don't know if they do or not, but that's what you get over there.
All right.
So,
picture number 9.
That is Kelstein House, but as everybody else knows it, the Eagle's Nest, shot from down in the parking lot where the bus goes. You ride on a bus up a very steep hill. These are special buses, specially geared.
Look at the granite. I guess it's granite.
Yeah, I imagine it is. It looks like it had been the bottom of a seabed a million zillion years ago, mm-hmm. if I remember my old geography class or geology class. And we get up to the parking lot here after a ride up the hill where your ears are popping constantly. And we get out in the parking lot, and we can see it up there, and then we have to go through that long tunnel that I showed
right.
in the last series. And onto the elevator that was the same elevator that all those people rode back in the 40s, up another, I think, 400 meters up to the Kelstein
that's,
house.
Are we looking up 400 meters at that?
We're looking up a long way. I had the zoom lens on.
Mm-hmm. So it's way up there. All right.
Yeah, it's way up there. Yeah, there are some people that walk all the way from the parking lot down below. I don't know how many days it takes them to get up there. Yeah. Or the bicycle guys are pedaling. They've got it geared down all the way.
Right, right.
They do like 30 pumps at a pedal to get 10 feet forward, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And these are tough people.
Yeah.
You wouldn't catch me doing it, not even when I was a kid. But God bless them. We cheer them on.
Look at that beautiful cloud blanket
closely,
over the mountains.
We're up in the Eagle's Nest, and that's the village way down below there, underneath the clouds. This was Greg Lutton took this photo a year ago.
Uh-huh.
He's an Aussie, but with German background heritage, and he came with us on our tour. Very valuable guy. He spoke German way better than I do, so he was our drafted to be our translator of the day.
That's a stunning view, an amazing location. And
and it's not really unusual for that scenery around there.
Well, as you said, you can't take a bad picture, right?
Right. Once you get way south of Munich, it all looks like this. And these are the mountains that Julius Caesar's troops came through. These are the mountains that Hannibal's troops came through with the elephants.
And Cooper's troops came through there, too.
Yeah,
every year.
Troops. Yep, every year. It's a great time. Then from there we go to, there's other places we go to around there, too, but we also then go to Berchtesgaden and up on the Obersalzberg, which is the next mountain over from the Kelstein Mountain, where the Eagle's Nest is, and photo number 11.
That doesn't have a number.
Yeah, it does, in the upper right-hand corner. I couldn't find it either. Upper right-hand corner, photo 11.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah. It's camouflaged.
Yeah, you made it black. Looked like two pieces of metal or something.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody ever said I was dumb and didn't mean it.
No.
My old crew chief used to say that.
Did he? All right. Now, that arch, when was this built?
This was built during the war years. This was prior to the war years when Bormann made the top of that mountain a special Sicherheitszone, Reich Sicherheitszone. In other words, a Reich security zone. All the houses up there, everything up there was all self-sustaining. This is the coal bunkers we're looking at here, but they had farms up there, they had dairies up there. All the food that was consumed by the leaders, Hitler, Goering, Bormann,
all the visitors, everybody.
Exactly. All the food was grown up there on the mountains. They had cattle ranches with
it was like a whole little city up there.
Exactly. And these are the coal bunkers. They had eight of these openings, and the trucks would come along the highway up above and dump their coal into the openings up above.
Mm-hmm.
And when people needed coal, they'd back the truck into these openings down in the lower section.
Happy shoveling.
No, they just open a little valve, a shovel, whatever, and let it pour into the truck, and then they close it.
I see.
So, they're not real big on people coming up there. So they got big boulders in front of the driveway, so you have to hoof it about 40 yards. Not bad.
No.
Excuse me. So then, number 12. This is always an interesting place for our people. This is on the Obersalzberg also. It's probably a mile from where the coal bunkers are. So we drive to this area. Mm-hmm. This is where Hitler's home had been, on the rise above where you see number 12. And that was where his home was, which had been Haus Wachenfeld. It belonged to somebody named Wachenfeld, I guess. And he leased it out when he was climbing the political ladder, and then he liked it so much when he became Führer, Chancellor, he bought the place and then added to it, but then it was bombed in the closing weeks of the war. And when the U.S. Army left there in the 1990s, I think it was, turned it back over to the Bavarian government, they immediately tore down the remains of Hitler's home, Goering's home, Bormann's home, etc. So there's no home left up above it. But this is the door into Hitler's bunker. He had a big bunker underneath that house. They all had bunkers. And there were bedrooms in there. There were libraries. And there's one room that had a whole bunch of phonograph records in it. But it's locked now, and you can't get in there because, God forbid, your brain would melt. But we
so
go down there.
In other words, it's still as it was.
Yes, exactly.
And you know what? You know, they make so much money with the Eagle's Nest. You'd
oh,
think
God,
that they'd get smart and open some other areas to tourism.
Yeah. They have problems with that all the time. When we were on the North German tour before, Goebbels had a mansion up there, Haus Bogensee.
Mm-hmm.
And a beautiful place. It was a mansion. And it had a long wing that was all guest bedrooms because Goebbels, you know, was head of the film industry. And any starlet who wanted to move up the ladder had to try out one of the beds with Goebbels. So after...
How absolutely shocking.
Yeah, how shocking.
Isn't that what they do in Hollywood, 7 or 8
yeah,
days a week?
That's what I've heard. So anyhow, when Germany lost, this was way out in the woods, so it never got bombed. The Soviets took it over. And with the collapse of the Soviet Union, they moved out. They had built huge, big, grandiose buildings all around on the property, which are falling apart now because, you know, typical Soviet construction. But we've been in that home because we know who has the keys. The German government took it over after the Cold War ended or after the Soviets were gone. They took it over, and they were deciding, hey, we need money. Let's sell this to the highest bidder. And then somebody says, oh, no, some wealthy neo-Nazi might buy it and make it a shrine. And so they'll let it sit for some time, and then somebody will say, hey, we need money. Let's sell this place. Okay, we'll put it on the market. And then somebody pops up and says, no, some wealthy neo-Nazi. You know, and they go back and forth. Last I heard, it's up for sale now.
Huh. Wait, so, what picture are we at now?
Well, then we got far afield. Now let's go to 13.
Oh, I mean, as far as that, what is going up for sale now, Harry? I missed it.
The house of, Joseph Goebbels. That's up outside of Berlin.
Oh, okay. We're not on the mountain anymore.
Well, yeah, we are, but I just got...
I mean, as far as the narrative goes, we went to Berlin and Goebbels' home, which is on the market now.
Right, because some of these other places, you're talking about how to raise money
for
sure, Germany.
Yeah, sure, yeah, okay.
So anyhow, here we are in 13. We stay in a hotel right up the hill from this. This was a hardened tunnel that was built toward the end of the war. We are standing on a rail line right here, but the rails were pulled up and it was paved over. It's now part of a street. This is where Hermann Göring had his treasure train in there with all sorts of stuff in it. That now Hitler was not looting stuff, but Göring, if it was silver or gold, he took it. He seized several castles and he just snatched everything he could.
So
get
that really was where he had the train in there, ready to roll,
right.
Packed
right.
With stuff, probably an armored train.
It was.
I wonder where he was going to go with it.
Well, he was going to run down into Austria and hopefully escape out that way, but of course never happened. The train was still in the tunnel when the Allies took over. And
but that's not the train that was trundled off to Poland and buried, right?
No. There were two of them now, two different trains full of gold in Poland that we've heard about, that we know are it's absolutely fictitious. There's just no such thing. But, you know, these treasure hunters, they sucker people into putting up money for their so-called treasure find. But I'm still...
So are there pictures of the train in the tunnel? Probably not. It was a high-security thing, but that would be interesting.
I've never seen one, so...
So that tunnel goes way back, but it was specifically for a train. It didn't lead anywhere else.
Right. It was for Goering's train, and it was going to Austria. But the tunnel didn't go to Austria. It was just more or less of a bomb shelter for his train. And now the city of Berchtesgaden has taken it over, and they're using it to store, you know, you see pipes and stuff in there, and in their tractors, they put them in there, so.
Have you ever been in that tunnel?
No, the gate's always been locked. And
any guesstimate on how deep it is into the mountain?
No, not very far, probably a quarter mile before it comes out, but it was just meant as a bomb shelter.
Oh, there is another end to it. It comes out the other side.
That's
okay,
right.
So the rail line went through it. I see.
Yeah, it went through it. But like I say, I didn't see anything in there interesting enough to make me want to pick the lock or climb the fence.
Right, which you have been known to do. There are obviously ghosts still standing guard in front of this tunnel.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if they have closed circuit TV in front of it, too.
Oh,
look. Look, Franz, there's another idiot American climbing in.
Yeah.
Let's go arrest him.
You know what's funny? It's as if the... we have to take a break here. The people that continue to be paranoid about anyone observing anything that's remnant of the Third Reich don't get it. First of all, the commercial end of it, the money-raising potential, these are huge revenue things.
Oh, boy. You're not kidding.
Secondly, younger people now, they don't care. They don't know. It's just, the whole thing is absurd to me. I'll never understand it.
I'm finding a lot of younger people in their 20s in Germany really want to know about this part of their history, and they're digging into it, and they don't want to hear that their grandfathers were monsters and murderers. They want the true story.
That's good to hear. Very good indeed. All right, hold on. We'll come right back with Harry.
Righto.
All right, we have a lot of pictures to get through, so let's pick up the pace and move through some of these neat shots. Okay.
Roll.
Yeah, all right. Now we got a trio, Greg Ernst and the Admiral.
Cooper. Yeah, Larry, Moe, and Curly. We also go down to southern Austria, and we have meetings with the old veterans when they have their big memorial event. We missed it this past trip because something came up and it had to be rescheduled at the last minute. We missed it. But Greg is the Australian who speaks good German. Ernst in the middle is Austrian-Australian. He's in the Australian Coast Guard Auxiliary, as I am in the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary. And all those badges and medals I have there are awards that I've been given from the Ulrichsburg people.
Nice.
You want? Yeah. I think I'm the only guy, to my knowledge, that has all these particular awards at one grouping. You want me to move fast? So
no, that's good. Okay. Congratulations on the trivia. It's nice to be recognized over there for all the amazing things you do. I'm sure that a lot of people over there visit the site and understand, and maybe even listen to these programs, and understand what you're doing for their history, their culture, and their country, and their people. Which is
right. Some years ago, I was also made ambassador to Ulrichsburg, which is where the memorial is. So, no badge for that, but if we had more time, I'd explain what they are, but next time.
Sure. All right, we got a room full of people with a lot of beer.
They have beer over there. They got a bunch of beer. This is the Saturday evening fellowship where there's a couple of hundred veterans in there from all branches and from other countries as well, but the vast majority of them are 5th SS. Excuse me, I think I'm getting old here.
Their brains have already melted, so there's nothing to worry about for them.
Right. And they're just decent, normal people, and mm-hmm. any of the American veterans who fought against the Waffen-SS tell me that they were the toughest people they ever fought. They just never quit.
Well, they were, everything I've read echoes that and then some, yeah.
Yeah.
And I want all of you to remember, on the homepage, under Harry's name, in guests, is something we'll mention before we close this half hour. It's a printed list
of the
ethics and what they called honor back then. And it's how you acted as an officer. And I just wonder if the Americans or any other military had such a strict code of ethics and behavior. They're all good things. Nothing crazy about them at all. They're very high level.
True enough.
All right. Number 16.
Number 16. Oh, yeah. We have a very good rapport with the police over there. That's me and the guy, the cop in charge. I guess he's a...
He looks much too nice to be a cop.
Yeah, well,
not that there aren't some nice cops, but...
And he's happy drinking his beer. I never saw a cop could drink on duty before, but I guess over there, it's allowed. Mm. So, and you can't see, but down lower, he's got his Belgian Shepherd on a leash there. Mm. They make sure that the left-wingers do not interfere, these old guys, and their ceremonies.
So they honor them that much. Good. That's nice to hear.
Some of these younger cops, they got 140-pound Rottweilers. Uh-huh. With a solid steel muzzle on them, because these Rottweilers look like they just want to have some left winger for lunch.
Right.
So they keep good control. And this is the memorial, and all those tents look like, you know, the jousting matches of the medieval days. Mm. And then they all have something inside them. Number 17, you got a better view at the tents. And they're getting all the flags ready for the presentation march. And there's Ernst, the Austrian-Australian. And we're at the base of the mountain.
Number 18, now that's probably a World War II veteran there.
Yes, the man and his wife, that's uh-huh. Engelbert Tauscher and his wife. And the story where Haider was getting drunk in a gay bar before his alleged crash, that's baloney, because he was with this old couple in their house. We've got pictures of him in the house with Engelbert and Mrs. Tauscher in the house. So how could he be in a gay bar getting drunk when he was visiting them? But that's another story. And here everybody's just milling about getting ready for the ceremony. Then they have a band, and they open the ceremony with a prayer. The Catholic priest has a short service, and then there's a Protestant, Evangelisch, as they call it. He gives a little speech service, and then they go on with the memorial service to the guys who fell in battle. And they remember everyone who fell in battle, no matter what flag, no matter what uniform, but if they fell in battle...
Okay, I'm back.
Memorial.
I was off the air for a moment there.
Oh, okay.
You kept talking? I was thinking. Keep talking, Harry. Keep talking.
I was talking, yep.
Good job.
I'm Irish. I never stop talking.
Good job. All right.
Okay. So then, photo 19, there's Ernst again, the Austrian-Australian.
Yeah.
And he's getting the flags ready for marching.
Uh-huh.
And the band, you see the band off to the right there. It's a beautiful day. This grass is just so thick and lush.
Uh-huh.
And as you see, there's the band in photo 20.
Mm-hmm.
And the typical German Umpa band. They got that tuba over on the left side.
Okay.
There's about a zillion wreaths that get placed, remembering the different divisions, groups, friends, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
22, of course, more food.
Right.
You can buy a beer and bratwurst there.
Now, this 23 picture we touched upon last time. And
oh, yes.
I guess when in doubt, chrome it out. Look at that.
Well, it cuts down on maintenance. We're going to be there again this year. Red Bull, the energy drink, is headquartered in Salzburg. You know, we Americans probably just think, well, it's an American company. Well, no, it isn't. It's an Austrian company headquartered in Salzburg. And they've got this magnificent, modern, forward-thinking hangar, and this is the only P-38 Lightning in Europe, they say, and I'm sure they're right, because I don't think there's but three or four flying P-38s in the whole world. but it's there. They've got a B-25, also chromed out.
Mm-hmm.
They've got Formula One race cars. They've got NASCAR cars. They've got all sorts of stuff in there, but this P-38 is the one that gets my attention. And these things are flyable. They fly them in parades and stuff like that. They can do the overhead.
It must
so
be
we're
quite
gonna
a
be
sight
there again
to see a chrome airplane flying around.
Well, if the sun hits it the wrong way, yeah, you won't see it much, I guess, but yeah, it cuts down on the maintenance. They don't have to worry about paint chipping. They don't have to worry about heavy scrubbing.
Okay, so let's go to Northern Patrol real quick here. I want to make sure we get to see all these.
Yeah, this is the only Type 7 submarine left in the world. They made over 800 of them, I think, the most largely produced submarine type in the world. And this particular one, U-995, was the submarine commanded by my best friend in Germany, Hans-Georg Hess. You see him in photo 2. Then in the outside, and we'll be in there, and that's in the Zentrale, in the central control room.
So he's back in the control room, and that's the skipper.
Right.
That's amazing.
This was taken some years ago, but he's passed away now. But
nonetheless, it's still
amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He used to meet us every year. He'd go through the boat with us. He was just a wonderful, wonderful guy. He became a doctor of law after the war.
Mm-hmm.
And he had an untypical sense of humor. He was always laughing. He was just a great guy. My best friend over there. He did so much to help shark hunters move forward. Stuff I don't even know about still. He opened so many doors. And
well, it looks like that the inside of that boat is just as immaculate as the outside, and that's the way that Germans take care of things.
Yeah, this there was another submarine that was interned in Spain, and they tried to sell it to the German government many, many years ago for one token payment of one peseta, and German government says, no, 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 Nazi, we don't want it, get it out of here. So it went to the scrapyard.
You're
this
kidding.
One was, no, I'm afraid not. This one was in the Norwegian Navy, because they took four of them.
Yeah.
This one was named Kaura, and it was being decommissioned, and they offered it to the German government again for like one kroner. And again, the German government says, no, no, get it out, no, Nazi, etc. And the German U-Boat Association, they said, wait a minute, we have property right on the shore of the Baltic, we'll take it. So it's the German U-Boaters Association, the German Submarine Association,
mm-hmm,
that takes care of it. And we go through it, and there in picture 3, you see us, this is some years ago, that's Hess, I'm shaking hands with Hess, and it's maintained in beautiful shape.
Now, what about the one in Chicago? What kind of shape is that one in?
Well, very good shape. They, I've got more hours on that boat than some of the crew because I used to live in Chicago. Mm-hmm. The museum took really good care of it, and then they moved it inside. They created its own little bunker, so it's inside, out of the weather, and so they won't have to replace the decking because they had to replace the decking every X number of years because mm-hmm. the weather got to it. But they maintain it very well. Unfortunately, they're pompous jackasses that run that museum, and one of our people went through there, and the guide, who knows nothing of the history, just what he's told to read, he's telling the group that when the boat was captured, many of the German crew had American cigarettes on them and American money on them because they came ashore when they were off the coast of America. And that's a crock of baloney. That never happened, and especially with U-505, because it never patrolled off the American coast at all, ever. Mm. But people hear it, they believe it.
Yeah, it's of course.
Pure drivel.
Yeah.
Now, when I tried to help the museum, they said, oh, no, we have our fact checkers. So, yeah, right. People don't know what the hell they're doing.
There are only two U-boats left then?
No, there's a few more. This one, U-995, is the only Type 7 left in the world.
Uh-huh.
U-2540 is a Type 21 up in Bremerhaven, and we visit that, too, and it's in the water. And then U-505 in Chicago had been the only Type 9C in the world, but then some years ago, U-534 was brought up from off the eastern side of Denmark, and it's now in the suburb of Liverpool, England, at the Merseyside ferry boat terminal.
I mean, it was salvaged and refloated?
Yes, and cleaned up. And it was not a war grave because everybody got off the boat except for the three anti-aircraft gunners, and their bodies got blown over the side, so there were no bodies inside.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. Are there any U-boats still that are salvageable?
I don't think so.
That aren't war graves.
Nice. No, there are, sure, there's plenty. Operation Deadlight, the several hundred U-boats were towed out into a super deep trench and scuttled after the war was over. Nobody on board, no people, 1,000 feet deep, etc. But some of them didn't make it out there. U-861, which was the boat of Jürgen Osten, who was also a member of Shark Hunters, it foundered and sank in 100 feet of water. Well, that's easy enough to go down and pick it up. However, the seawater is not kind. And any of the photos I've seen of any of the boats that are sunk in fairly shallow water, most of the boat is very thin, maybe 16th of an inch thick, maybe 8th of an inch thick steel.
That's kind of like an automobile fender.
Yeah. Yeah, the fuel tanks, the ballast tanks, because they're open to the sea down below, so they don't have to hold the pressure like the main hull. The conning tower fairing, that's thin. All that's gone, so you've got a great big long tube with another tube sticking out, which is the pressure part of the conning tower, and there's not really much recognizable as a submarine.
So the exterior hull is all gone.
Right. The only thing you got left mostly is the pressure hull.
Well, if the pressure hull and the engine and everything are still salvageable, they should still pull it up and put a new exterior hull on it. See me? What an imagination I have.
With whose money? Too bad Obama's leaving. We could form ourselves a foreign navy, declare war on the United States, and they'd give us the money to repair it.
We wouldn't even have to declare war. He's run the American debt up over $2 trillion again this year alone.
Yeah,
plus trillion.
Yeah. It's like the drunken sailor, except the drunken sailor stops spending money when he runs out.
Not this guy. It went from 13 trillion to 21 trillion in his 8 years.
Well, he promised change.
Yeah. He didn't give any change back to us, so he kept it all.
Anyhow, photo 4. This is a beautiful but very sad place. You see all those huge big bronze plaques on the wall. Every German U-boat that was sunk is represented there with the name of the skipper, whether he was killed or not, and then the name of everybody on the boat who was lost when that boat went down. And
that's 30,000 people.
Yeah, 29,984, to be precise. We have the complete list here. And back years ago, when we had U-boat veterans traveling with us, we'd be moving through this place, and you look back, and there he'd be, one of them. I remember a guy named Pete Peterson. He rode U-518 for three patrols, and he got transferred off, and the boat went out and got sunk. All hands lost. He was standing there, I remember it, with his head bowed and his left hand touching the name of each one of his buddies, and the tears were running down his face. So, you know, so much for the evil Nazi thoughts. Right. And every so often, jerks, thugs, whatever, come up to this place, and they bust all those flower pots, and they splash paint around.
Right, right.
And the old widows and the old survivors would take the bus out there on the weekends and clean it all up. Idiot people.
Yeah, I know. A lot of them are
yeah.
Don't qualify.
That's in Teal.
Yeah.
And then we see picture 5. This is the famous Wewelsburg Castle, 5 and 6. That's where Heinrich Himmler was going to reconstruct the Knights of the Teutonic Order.
Oh, a lot of very occult stuff went on in that castle.
Yeah, down in the tower. Let's see, not the tower you're seeing in those pictures, but the tower that's behind my back taking the picture.
Uh-huh.
Down in the lower level, that had been a water cistern, had been cleaned up, straightened up, and made into the chamber, huge dome ceiling, where the young SS officers would swear their oath of allegiance.
Huh.
And if you stand in the middle, your slightest whisper just thunders off all the walls. The acoustics are so good. But now, in between each of the 12 slit windows, because 12 was a big thing to the Third Reich. There were 12 Knights of the Round Table, 12 Disciples of Christ. So 12 was a big thing to them. So there were 12 slit windows, and now in between each one of these windows, they've got some horrible painting depicting how bad the Germans were to certain people. And you have to go through a museum before you can even get into the crypt now. It used to be you could just walk in there, but now you have to go through this museum. It's the only way to get there. And the museum tells how mean the Germans were to a certain group of people. And there's signs all over, no photography. You have to have a guide with you because Big Brother is watching. And the guide told me, you know, you can't even say 88. And I said, what the hell is 88? He said, well, the eighth letter of the alphabet is H. So 88 means HH or Heil Hitler. I said, no, in my case, it means Happy Harry. He says, well, if you say it, you're going to get kicked out anyhow.
It's also a caliber of a gun.
Yeah, that's correct. Several guns, actually. The big long-nose anti-aircraft gun, 88. Also, the Type 9 Cs had a smaller, different 88 mounted on the bow.
It's also the best engine Harley-Davidson ever made for its motorcycles is an 88.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. My Harley is way back in the old day were 74s. That's the biggest they made back then.
Now they're doing one. They have 107. They
know,
bigger
I've
is better.
Some of these things. Wow. Must
I don't
be
know.
Something to,
it's too much. It's like too that. Much power. I've ridden 103s and that's plenty.
I'd like to have a bike again, but here in this area, the average age is about 75, and these people can't see the hood ornament on their own car. I'd be killed in no time. But anyhow, if you take a picture inside, which our resident psychiatrist, Dr. Charlie Ellis, did, suddenly you think you hear the voice of God. Photography is forbidden, because they got you on closed-circuit TV, and you know somebody's on a microphone. They got watch people all over the place, and they see them up on the control room. Photography is forbidden. And Charlie said, just to hell with you, and he kept right on shooting pictures.
Yeah, good for you. All right. Then, we have we're out of time, but we've got to squeeze another couple minutes here.
Okay. So, 7 and 8 is Cecilienhof. That's the home of the German prince in Potsdam, where the big three, big four, whatever,
yeah,
had their conference. And that Red Star, by law, has to stay there to commemorate the Soviets. 9 is the room in which Keitel and Jodl signed the surrender and signed their own death warrant, more or less.
Yeah.
And 10, we're in that room. We go into that room. We visit there. 11, they've got their own obligatory little armored museum outside. And 12, last but not least, we've all heard of Checkpoint Charlie. This is Checkpoint Bravo, which is on the Autobahn going into East Germany from West Germany, or East Berlin.
Uh-huh.
And it had fallen into rack and ruin, but now it's open as a tourist spot, and we'll be going there as well. Your listeners can go to www.sharkhunters.com, go to tours, and see all sorts of photos that, you know, we don't have time for on your show. And send me an email, sharkhunters@earthlink.net. Say they listen to tonight's show, they want a copy of the magazine, and we'll email it out to them pronto.
Great. And if any of you are thinking about taking a trip, a patrol, go for it. It's a once-in-a-lifetime trip. You'll experience things that nobody else can, unless you're along with Harry.
Yeah, on this last tour we had two of the people, it was the third time they'd been with us, and one guy, Bill Napier, is a Marine Corps combat vet, it was the 6th patrol he was with us.
Wonderful. All right.
It says something about they like it.
You got it. All right, Mr. C, take care of yourself. We'll be in touch.
My pleasure.
All right, good night.
Good night.
And that's hour number 2, and thank you for joining us on that tour, and we'll come right back with hour 3.